Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to the show. Tonight's topic is on a European Asian geostrategist named Zbigniew Brzezinski, and we will be discussing him as soon as I play the intro music. It's the holidays now, and there's a lot to take in. And we will be talking about that towards the end of the show.
I offer up myself to you, protected by your hand. My dreams and schemes and all I have surrendered your plan. I know that I'm inadequate. I stumble and I fall, but still you always pick me up whenever I will call. We humbly bow before you. We love to praise and adore you. We humbly bow before the throne. We give you all the glory. Salvation is our story. We humbly bow before the throne. I offer up myself to you, protected by your hand. My dreams and schemes and all I have is surrendered to your plan. I know that I'm inadequate. I stumble and I fall. Still, you always pick me up whenever I will call. We humbly bow before you. We love to praise and adore you. We humbly bow before the throne. We give you all the glory. Salvation is our story.
As the 21st century draws to a close, the United States has emerged as the world's only superpower. No other nation possesses comparable military and economic power, as we know. And that happened around 1989 when the Berlin Wall collapsed. But it also puts the United States in a burdening situation in which sometimes we are acting like we feel we have to manage the global stage of international relations. But on the other hand, we got into a 20-year war in Afghanistan, which was debilitating and useless. As the 20th century draws to a close, as it has, the U.S. has emerged as the only superpower. Yet the critical question facing America does remain unanswered. What should be the national global strategy for maintaining our exceptional position in the world? And the word exceptional in foreign policy and politics means that we are a nation that represents one of the few on earth that upholds human rights and human values based on French belief systems of the late 1700s, and the rule of law is dominant in our culture. His book, The Grand Chessboard, presents Brzezinski's hold and provocative geostrategic vision for American preeminence in the 21st century. Central to his analysis is the exercise of power on the Eurasian landmass, which is home to the greatest part of the globe's population. Natural resources and economic activity stretching from Portugal to the Bering Strait, from Lapland to Malaysia. Asia. Eurasia is the grand chessboard on which America's supremacy will be ratified and challenged in years to come. The task facing the U.S. is to manage the conflicts and relationships of Europe, Asia, and Mideast, that no superpower arises to threaten our interests and our well-being. Now, I want to stop there. I'm going to read two more sentences after this. The heart of the grand chessboard is Brzezinski's analysis of the four critical regions of Eurasia and the stakes of Europe, Russia, Central Asia, and East Asia. The crucial fault lines may seem similar, but the implosion of the Soviet Union has created new rivalries and new relationships. Now, this book is probably 25 years old, so I just want to give a quick update of my analysis. Managing Europe's conflict and also the desire for outer-bound countries that want to be in NATO that traditionally weren't, and Middle East religious dominance in the sense where they direct all their government activities in terms of their religious faith is no easy task, because not only is there going to be competition for resources, but there's stagnant companies like Saudi Arabia that are set in their way that could be an instrumental foreign policy country, but they don't go out of their way to help people, even in Yemen where they partially caused the civil war. So I don't think the United States is able to handle it, and because of our presence in Iraq and Afghanistan in the past where we did not do them justice, we are seen as an enemy. So I think when we finally do get to that key word, end times, there's really going to be no governmental authority that can manage the landmass of Eurasia. Go with that for the intro. Here we go. We have Pianki on the line. And I want to thank Pianki for introducing me to this book, which I'm planning to order on Amazon, by Zbigniew Brzezinski. I'm going to pull in Don first because he called in first. Hi, Don. How's it going?
Hello, Jane. Hello, everyone. It's going fine. Just resting up and getting ready for work tomorrow.
What time do you work?
9 o'clock.
Okay. Well, we're not going to make it more than an hour show tonight unless something really dramatic happens. John will be calling in soon. unless we have a guest caller similar to last week, we're just going to stick with the nuts and bolts. But I'm also pulling in Pianki. Hi, Pianki.
Hello, Jane and Don. I'm happy today because my Smucker's grape jam arrived. I can't find it in no place.
I thought he was going to
say. You mean they don't have
it
in the regular stores?
They have jelly, but they don't have jam.
Jam, right.
Yeah, up
and
here in Minnesota, they do a lot of crafts, and a lot of people make their own jelly. So I'm sorry they don't have Smucker's jam. I like jam better than jelly.
Oh, yeah, it's good, man, especially with peanut butter. Ooh-wee, baby.
Sometimes we just have to be happy for the simple things.
Yep.
So,
well, look, I ordered a jar back on October the 9th, and it hadn't came. What they did, they refunded me my money. So I had to order it again 2 days ago, and it came today, so that was a lot better.
Did you send it to I know you have two addresses. Did you accidentally send it to the wrong address?
No.
Or were they out of stock?
I don't know what they was out of, but I don't care. I know one thing. It shouldn't take October to November to December. But anyway, they gave me my refund, which is about $18. And I ordered these six jars the other day, and they came. So I'm happy.
Well, that sounds like you have enough for at least a half a year.
Yeah, you're right. And I don't have to depend on my grandson getting the right stuff when you go to the store. But I heard what you was talking about, but go ahead.
Well, I felt after I studied the book, obviously I wish I had it in my hands, they were just talking about the emergence as America is the only superpower, but 20 to 25 years later, there's some major flaws. Like, even though Russia is not considered a global domination superpower, they're making as much impact as if they were. And because of their location in the Euro-Asia, they're the kind of country that persists in whatever their goals are, even if they're failing. Like in Syria, when the whole country fell apart, they still persisted in there till they were broken up completely. So I don't discount Russia at all as a superpower. Maybe it's a different frame of mind, but they're still pursuing foreign policy aggression wherever they feel like they must. Now, this author, Zbigniew Brzezinski, also has a special section in the book on the Ukraine, but I didn't get to that part. And already we have a guest caller, and I believe it's an international caller because it doesn't have an American area code. So we used to have a guy named Singapore Mike, but I don't think it's him. I'll check to see. One moment. Hello, who am I speaking with?
No, this is not Singapore Mike. This is Nosh. What's going on?
Oh, hi, Nosh. Good to have you. Did Pianke tell you? Are you friends with Pianke? Well, he had another friend from the South.
Unfortunately,
but you know him from other
radio
programs?
Yeah, we've talked for years, man. You know how it goes.
Yeah, well, anyways, I know who you are. No, my brain's a little clearer. I work odd hours. You're from Atlanta, right?
Yeah, I'm down here.
Yeah. So anyways, last week we did a kind of like a tarnished memorial on Henry Kissinger, and most people were – I was going to try to keep it restrained into foreign policy, but we had a guest caller who lambasted him, rightfully so, because all the the carpet bombing in Cambodia and the disabling Salvador Allende's leadership in Chile. So this week, Pianke had mentioned a book to me that I studied a little bit. It's called The Grand Chessboard by Zbigniew Brzezinski. But I noticed his book was a little dated because it was right after the advent of the Soviet Union falling. But he did make a good point that a lot of across the Euro-Asian continent from Ireland down to Malaysia, that it seems like that seems to be where most of the activity is happening in the world right now, including Central Europe. So I just kind of glanced into it because I had to teach school today, but
you know,
what's your insight on what's going on lately, and what would you like to talk about?
Were you asking me?
Yes.
Unfortunately,
Brzezinski. Come on, Bianchi. Yeah, Brzezinski. We've talked about him before in that book, you know, The Grand Chessboard. Of course, Time is a really good book, kind of insightful, give you an idea about how some of these people think. You know, also know him from his daughter, who hosts that TV show with Scarborough, Mika. That's his daughter. But
I didn't
He's an old school Cold War veteran type of guy. I think he gets a lot wrong as far as Asia, though, just because he didn't see China coming as an emerging superpower, which they, you know, essentially are now. We no longer live in a mono superpower world. But basically, we're just going to see these different groups kind of, you know, really matter in the world going forward. The BRICS coalition, you know, they're going to have a lot to say about world affairs, period. What happens in Africa is probably the biggest story, because no matter what, you've got brokers from the West and brokers from the East trying to make deals with them. And as those countries, you know, kind of get more on solid footing, those deals won't be as one-sided. They've got the largest number of people in the world under 25 and largest number of people connected to the Internet. Now, of course, big infrastructure
and
problems,
they also have
big debt problems.
Uncountable resources that era needs.
Yeah.
Now,
right,
Bianchi, Naj, can I interrupt you a minute?
Go ahead and finish your intro. Yeah, because I just wanted to end with this one thing. There's a book I would recommend people check out. It's called Cobalt Red, and that book is about the discovery of cobalt and coltan in the Congo and how that whole story evolved into what we see now, where people tell you, well, they got child workers, but it's a much bigger story than that. Like, there was a gentleman who was trying to create a shed in his backyard and was digging to create the shed and ended up hitting this material. He takes it to the local township to a trader to sell it, and the guy says, can you find more of this? This is really valuable. So the guy digs up almost his whole neighborhood, creating tunnels under everybody else's house, and makes it out of the Congo with, you know, a couple of $1 million. And everybody, you know, of course, like the gold rush of 49 here, everybody starts digging up their yard to find the cobalt and coltan. And then, of course, you know, big government moved in, big corporations moved in, pushed the people out. You know how interesting that story can get. But check out that book, Cobalt Red.
Yeah, that's interesting. Yeah. Go ahead. I was just going to say, last week we had a dominant guest caller, and Bianchi didn't have time to talk, so I told him that if he needs to talk, talk. So it has nothing to do with you, Naj. My friend John always brings up child labor in the Congo, but I never heard that part of the story, and it sounds awesome.
Well,
yeah,
that's
important,
but of course, you know, John's right. Yeah, John's
what you
right,
call
though.
Child
terrible
labor is children participating in the economic system. There's nothing wrong with that. You got children in the United States on the farms that drive the tractor, right? They drive, start off driving early. Leave them alone. What should be going on is the more African Americans, if they was qualified in those areas of expertise, that there would be a good opportunity for them. I took advantage of them in the Takara area of Ghana in mining for precious metal called gold, and others should do the same thing, that is, that they have the expertise. And you made mention about Brzezinski was a devil.
He was? Well, you didn't tell me that.
I'm for sure you would have found out if you study him. Him, Kissinger, the Dulles brothers, Frank DeGucci. You had Kermit Roosevelt. You had another person out of Dallas, Texas. You know, the Dulles brothers and Eisenhower, and Eisenhower was a great general, but I really, you know, they've done some terrible. They concocted the first assassination of a foreign official, that being Patrice Lumumba, trying to allegate that he was a communist.
I knew about that, Pianki, because the Dulles brothers and that other person you mentioned now, Roosevelt, they overthrew the Iraqi government at least once.
Yeah, Mossadegh. No, yeah.
Mossadegh, and then they also, right around the time King Faisal, my mind's cloudy, but I wrote a paper about it. Mossadegh is my hero, and they overthrew him, and British Petroleum totally dominated their oil industry. But Kermit was sleazy, and so were the Dulles brothers, and so was Norman Schwarzkopf's dad. He was involved in that,
and
too.
Also, I mean, we can go on back. You can go back at the Battle of Oldham Ra there in the northern Sudan, where Lord Kitchener took a steamboat up the Sudan, up the Nile River, to an area in the Sudan called Oldham Ra. And he massacred about 25,000 Sudanese who didn't have anything to fight with other than spears. But the thing about it, guess who was leading one of Britain's Lancer groups? No other than Winston Churchill. He was involved in that massacre, too.
In the Sudan?
Yes.
And Churchill documented himself. You can find his book, The River War, where you can read Churchill talking about some of these things that they did openly.
You look at Martin Stanley and his dealing with King Leopold II, who massacred over 10 million Congolese. And in his pursuit for rubber that Firestone used, the hands off of children that did not meet their daily allocation of harvesting the rubber plant.
That's pretty
rude.
Was that in Liberia?
It gets interesting. No, that was in the Congo.
Oh.
Now, here's where it gets interesting. I've been to Belgium, and I sat in Belgian airport waiting on a flight exchange, and I walk around in amongst the shops in the airport and come across these candy stores. And these candy stores have little hands, chocolate hands, which represent the hands of the kids that he cut off today.
That's really depressing.
Yes, it is.
We also have John on the line. I was looking up the Mossadegh incident, and after I was reading a few minutes, I didn't realize that Kermit Roosevelt died of suicide because he had lifelong depression, and he killed himself in Alaska during World War II. But did you guys know that Teddy Roosevelt's wife and mother died on the same day from a virus? So Teddy Roosevelt had a lot of demons to bear, too, in his life.
He had a lot of demons.
We have John on the line, and everyone can talk, including Don, but Don, why don't you just sit back a while until you want to talk, since you're tired?
So, no problem. But this, I mean, this history, Zane, you're not listening. You're not listening at the oppression.
I hate when you say that, Don, because you want to know what? I am listening, and I have a background in this area, and that's not helpful when you say stupid things.
It's not that I was stupid. It's just that there's action that needs to be taken. We've got, you've got situations that are right at home that you need to really look at, you know, and it's possibly because of, you know, black and white. As simple as that. And
we're talking about a foreign policy writer who lived 25 years ago. What am I missing?
You heard Pianki say he was, and he was, Zbigniew Brzezinski was evil. And he did have all of those connections. But I didn't know about Kermit Roosevelt myself. But some of those other folks were just, they were nothing more than dictators in the North. But Russia still has a major power in Eurasia, as you call it, because of their oil.
That's not what I call it. That's what the foreign policy person called it.
Right, right. I mean, people don't call it Eurasia too much anymore. But, yeah, that's...
Well, it was Asia Minor, and they made all these changes. But, no,
right.
He was very, very... He was a devil. That's what he was. And not only him, you had another guy down in Sanford, down in Florida. I can't think of his first name. His last name was Sanford. That's why you got Sanford, Florida. Sanford, Florida was a black community. It had a railroad, manufacturing, and everything. And it got swallowed up by the greater community, and I can't think of its name. But Sanford was an attaché for King Leopold to the United States.
I know about most Middle Eastern coups, and I did a paper on the Ba'ath Party, and back when Saddam Hussein was normal, and they wanted to create a like an intercontinental Ba'ath Party that was supportive of pan-Arabic desires, back when they had, you know, common and goals, and they didn't. Saddam Hussein did not turn into a dictator, but I don't know a lot about. I know about like King Leopold and the bottom half of Africa, but I don't know a ton about that stuff. But most of Dave's story got elevated when Ben Affleck made that movie on the fallen attempts of Jimmy Carter to try to rescue the hostages. But Ben Affleck, he put the information about Mossadegh's fall and why the beginnings of why Iran hated us was mainly because their only democratic government in recent history was destroyed by America and Britain. So somebody else can go now while I look up more information.
Mossadegh nationalized Iran's oil field and took it out of the hand of the British. You know, I'm going to tell you the truth. The culprit in this world through world history has been Britain. Their attitude and some of the devious stuff that they've done, racist stuff that they've done, they should hold that title. And one would just look merely in the museums of the British Museum and also the Deluge Museum of France. They filled with African art and artifacts. If Africa was to take out its art and artifacts just out of those two museums, they would have to close their doors.
The thing is with Africa is they were ruined too by European colonialism. And I lived with the Sierra Leone family, and one of the people living in the house said, we were talking about something like Nigerian internet scams or something. He said that the reason Africa became greedy is because they learned from the Europeans and Americans. It was never like that until the European expansionism in Africa.
Well, let's not. They have all the same human emotions and mentalities that anybody else would have, same as anybody else. Now, as far as it becoming a cultural, like, marker and something that they just practice on the regular, yeah, you could talk about, you know, the conditions and the influence from the outside. But, you know, same as anybody else. It's like that noble savage myth that people tell, well, these innocent people were never, you know, this and too corrupted. No, they had their share of those things, too. But no matter what, 65 nations in the world have an Independence Day celebrating their break from Britain. That alone should tell you everything you know about that robbing, marauding, you know, little island there. But this world we're living in now, man, there are going to be some things that are changed, not because these countries aren't going to, you know, squeeze as hard as they can. It's just because the world is so much bigger now. Information travels so fast. look at how difficult it is for, you know, the IDF to kind of paint the narrative they want about this situation over in Gaza right now. These things will not be as easily controlled and maintained as they used to be. And just because of supply chains and information, this whole, you know, superpower thing, it seems like a thing of the past. I think we're going to see much more regional domination and regional control and spheres of influence for countries becoming much smaller and, you know, more local.
That's a good point, because that's why it's so hard to – well, I don't want to open up this topic, but I'll just give an example. That's why it's so hard to handle electing a president every 4 years, because there's so much misinformation and it's created a bigger division. But what I do want to comment on, Naj, is that we are constantly critiquing our world leaders and how they're handling problems. But then we don't know secret things like how the Al Jazeera, if you watch stuff like that, like Zelensky's not as innocent as people think, and who knows if he's even managing our resources right that we're giving him. I'm just using that as a small example. But
Jay, stay there. Yeah. Stay there, though. Think about it. When we cut a check to a country like Zelensky in this situation, what does he actually see? The money is cut. The check goes to the DOD. The DOD spreads it out by the different departments and different, you know, armaments that it's supposed to go to. Then we got the private contractors who get their cut. Then you have the military directors and advisors who we have in Ukraine who determine where certain money goes. I'm not so sure he has, you know, he has only but so much say in how this goes. And ultimately, like any other country that's propped up, the way this ends is not good for him no matter what. If we pull out at the 13th hour and Russia takes over, then, of course, Putin is going to be brutal. But if we're able to maintain and keep a foothold over there, what does that mean for them? Well, they're going to have to privatize everything and sell off everything to pay off the debt, and they're just essentially going to become a non-sovereign country and junior partner to the West.
Well, Putin is getting paid, too. Don't you never think that ain't happening?
Oh, for sure.
By the way, I just want to mention one footnote, and then I'll have Don and John talk a minute. When I was doing my research, Roosevelt, who was only 26 at the time, wrote a book on Mossadegh called Counter Coup, and he posed as a CIA cover named James Lockridge in July of 53. And the CIA had to scan, you know, like go through his book to allow certain secrets they didn't want out. But back then, like people would taunt. It wasn't an act of courage what they did. Like Pianki said, England got threatened when Mossadegh nationalized the oil industry because it meant that they weren't going to get the profits. So was the reason England and America intervened with a coup.
England shouldn't have, you know, that's been a big problem throughout the history of the modern world is that country, Britain. Look at the war they had at the Falkland Islands. It took about a week for British ships to sail all the way down to Argentina. And then, too, Argentina is a racist country. At the end of slavery transportation, there was a lot of, I think about 14 to 18% of Argentina's population was black slaves. But they, when you go down there looking for one, you can't find them. That's because they have disappeared through all sorts of policies and so forth. The same thing has happened in Brazil. In 1875, mm-hmm. former president Rutherford Hayes called a meeting. It was called the Niagara Conference. And actually, the subject of the conference is what do we do with the Negro? That's what it was. And what the United States said, they was going to handle the Negro through Jim Crow and discrimination. What the countries in South America said how they would handle the Negro was through amalgamation. Other words, they're going to make them disappear.
Yeah, and that's why you see like the whole color issue down there being totally different than the one here. So here, one drop made you a black person, but down there, one drop of white blood made you a white person. So that's like when you read all these stories or writers from the, you know, from that era, they'll talk about the swarthy Southern, you know, South America and Central America, because they're talking about people who are, you know, of mixed background. But in, like I said, in their society, that one drop of white blood made you a white person. So their nobility would look totally different than the nobility here. Like it's a really interesting thing. And to the other point about Iran, I want to recommend something else to y'all. This is just a YouTube video. It's a comedian from England. Salute to that brother. Really good guy, Robert Newman. The video is called The History of Oil. He not only gets into that situation as far as the takeover, the problems with British Petroleum, and their idea about how they were going to monopolize the oil markets. Because remember, in the world at this time, you're shifting from steam power to oil power. This is a monumental shift in world energy use, efficiency, how far you can go, how fast you can go as far as shipping, transportation of goods, everything else. Like, this is a big, you know, technological change to go from steam power to oil. And, of course, because of the stakes at hand, you get to see the West promotes themselves as, you know, democracies and free rights of man and everything else. You find out as soon as their profits are at risk, they'll put on that mask and become, you know, savages.
At Niagara Conference was held in 2 years, 1875 and 1877. It was convened both times by Rutherford B. Hayes, former U.S. president, in Niagara, New York, by the way.
A weak
and
president.
And also they
remember,
had the Versailles Treaty.
The Hayes
Treaty.
Compromise, Bianchi, right?
Yeah.
Oh, go
right.
ahead. I'm sorry.
They also had the Versailles Treaty where
was,
they divided up Africa.
Yeah.
Amongst Europeans. You know, mm-hmm. See, now here's the thing. What the hell are you doing this? It's the same damn crazy mess that they're doing in Palestine. It's the same thing. But you know, the way luck has it, when you look at the population projections of Europe, Jane, me and Nas is going to take pictures of you because you may not be around. They've got -1 population growth. In Israel, it's like -1.4. They ain't going to be around. It's just be a matter of time. I mean, that's just the same thing here in the United States. Black Americans still are the number 2 population producers, maybe 3. Whites are dying off fast. You got Hispanics. They like a 4-point-something. Blacks is like a 2-point-something. Even after all the abortions, I mean, it's just awesome. After all the abortion, they still have a positive population growth.
Well, that's the funny thing about finance.
Yeah, and don't talk about Nigeria. In another 50 years, when you count people on the streets, 1, 2, 3, 4, Nigerian, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, Nigerian, 11, 12, 13, 14, Nigerian. Their population would be the second largest in the world, right behind India. Every 5th person you count would be a Nigerian.
Yeah, the thing I was going to add to what you're saying about, you know, birth replacement rates, because we look at these all over the globe, what different countries, you know, what trends are showing. But the thing that holds in all countries that you find is if you have a couple who makes, you know, 90,000 plus a year together, those are the couples who are less likely to have children. While you look at people who are close to the line of poverty or close to the middle class line, those are the people who do have children. So your birth replacement rates, a lot of it you can track, you know, there's a lot of causality by finance, which is, you know, which is an interesting thing, because you would assume it would go the other way. The poor people have them. Well, what entertainment do poor people have besides going to see a movie or whatever, you know, little vice they have? Well, they're more likely to procreate a little more than people who are jet-setting, you know, little globalist travelers who have more vacation time and, you know, enjoy their lives a little more. They're more likely to look at a childbirth as a disruption, so they have less children. So you know, this is an interesting thing, a trend that exists globally.
I was just letting you guys finish out your conversation. John, do you have anything to add?
Yeah.
I was just going
to
say,
I'm trying to leave space for them to jump in,
that's
man.
One of the things that I always talk
John.
About is the despair. Yeah,
hello.
John. Hey, John.
Hey, John, go ahead with your comment, and then John can go next.
That's one of the things I always talk about is the population disparities. You've got, you know, with the general population growth, you've got, you know, three of the four poorest countries in the world with the fastest growing populations. So you're looking at, you know, that sheer fact of numbers and over time is going to overwhelm everyone. So in a lot of ways, what we're doing is a, you know, exercising futility. So what we're trying to do is to just talking about all kinds of stuff. That's why I brought up earlier about the action thing. It's absolutely imperative that we don't just sit around and talk, that there's something that is done to solve some of these problems, you know, and also create the world and the communities that we're looking to create. As I said, I've got children, and Bianca's got kids and grandkids that are making a difference in the world, that are really, they've had a strong foundation and are making a mark at young ages. And if you project some of that, that can be profound over time. And that's what, you know, that's what the parenting, or at least, you know, being a person of the human race is about. It's about the next generations. You know, essentially, we're just here to procreate. We're not here to eat, sleep, or pine or yearn for things. We're here to procreate. That's the only reason we're here is on Earth, whether we're put here by aliens or whether it's natural by God, whatever you want to call it. This is the only thing that we're here to do. Everything else is nebulous.
Well, there's too many. Go ahead.
You said another evil nation, that being France. France is another evil nation. And you look how it is doing with 14 African countries, with what they put it in place back in the 1950s, called the CFA Pact. And that's where they control the monetary instruments in those 14 African countries, where they make them use the CFA franc. And here's the point. For every dollar that these countries have, they have to put 65 cents to be deposited in the French treasury. They are made to pay 15% of that on their to insure their own money, thereby leaving them with about 20 cents to run the country. Well, that's totally ridiculous. That ain't going to never work. They need to shake these countries off. And every time you try to shake them off, like Cote d'Ivoire did with President Lord Gbagbo around the time that Obama was elected, and they propped up the election with somebody that was born in Burkina Faso by the name of Alessandra Quadra, who's married to a French woman, by the way. Well, they just started destroying the economy. Matter of fact, China had a contract under the Lawrence government to build a bridge, and with the help of Obama, when France came in and bombed the hell out of the country, they destroyed the Air Force and bombed the jets that they had recently sold to Cote d'Ivoire. To only show you how ragged they are on that. So that's just terrible. It is just totally terrible. And that stuff is going to stop.
John, how about you?
Well,
populations vary, and they go through cycles. And example, from what I was hearing, it sounded like in a couple, you know, couple of few years, there's going to be no more white people on the planet, and in the United States is going to be just going to die off. It's like, no, we had, I was just looking at population. I mean, in, you know, you go back at 19th century, I mean, top 1900s, you know, top of that, we had about 76 million people. How many people we have now? 330 million. I think we have triple the people. Are we all going to just disappear? No, it's just, we're looking at rate of replacement. But the point is that the base is expanding. White people are shrinking, but we're not going to disappear. Mexicans aren't going to disappear. It's just, you have different cycles of growth. You know, people start going, oh, we better have some more kids. And, you know, at one point, China was expanding at a certain level, and it shrunk back. The main thing is the age. Average person, they say, in the United States now is 38 years, at least 2020, whereas about in the 80s, the average age was 30. Now, that's an extra 8 years. You go back into the 60s, it's like, yeah, about 30. Looks like when we get to the 1900s, it's kind of 22, 24. So we're getting older as a population, you know, people living longer. So that's where the problem with Social Security and other programs, whereas more people are living longer and retiring, they have less of a base to support that. So economically, we're going to have some problems there with the system. You have to replace it with more younger people having babies. The question is, what kind of quality of education and skill are we going to have replacing it? And the bigger problem with all these big population countries is with AI. If things start going robotic, you know, it's a liability if you've got 1.5 billion people, if most of their jobs are taken place by robots. Suddenly running lean with, you know, a couple hundred million people is a better deal if they're tech savvy than having a billion people who can't get jobs. Unless you're going to do a land war. Yeah, but, yeah, there's a lot of different – it's a shifting game. I think with AI and the robotics and the, you know, the cloning and the chipping in people, I think that's going to affect the game. And, like, I'm looking at the book. You know, I read the Bible. So all this stuff, you know, we go over it, and it's like the Bible's just showing us how the movie's going to go. We're going to Armageddon. And, but, you know, you can believe me or not believe me, but that's how it's going to go. And, but if you throw out the Bible, you know, go ahead and play with it. I won't be around for this, you know, destruction. I mean, as far as next 20 or 30 years, you're going to have robots running everything, you know, from what they tell me. Or otherwise, the UFOs will take over.
John, hold on one second. Let's address one thing. Nobody said white people wouldn't exist in America. We just said the demographics of America would change. The population would look different than what we see now. Now, as far as the AI and everything else, as far as the globe, this falls into the lump of labor fallacy, where people assume when AI comes in or things are mechanized, that means there are X amount of jobs, and now because of this, there's only going to be Y amount of jobs, when in reality what's going to happen is not only will new jobs and new ideas be thought of that we haven't come up with yet, but things are going to expand with AI. They're not actually guaranteed to go into a much smaller ball of employable people. So this AI stuff that you see a lot in like tech magazines, or you see these webinars online, a lot of this is people talking their book. They're looking for venture capitalists to invest in whatever technology they've come up with. So in order to sell it, they tell the story of AI replaces and disrupts this industry. Therefore, that industry is wiped out forever. You see what I'm saying? So a lot of this is people talking their book. They're just trying to make money.
Yeah, no. Let's explore that. Can we explore that, though? Okay, so your waitress jobs, your driving jobs, even in construction, they're getting to it, where the machines build things. All your auto factory jobs, you might have a few people supervise it, and, you know, maybe there's, and I mean, they're even getting to where it can pick strawberries. They have machinery now, but they can't do it in an open field. It has to be like a controlled greenhouse type of thing. So what are you going to do when all, you know, everything's self-serve and click, click at the store? I mean, you see it at the store. There's not eight cash register people. There's like one guy there or two, and the rest is like 20 different self-checkout. So what are the new jobs we're going to do as AI takes stuff? I mean, what are we going to do? Like,
I designed seaports. The last seaport I designed for an African group, a Nigerian group, who was looking at the largest shipbuilders and largest seaports in the world. And you got Singapore, and I can't think of the other ones. The Asian. They don't use robotics. They continue to use manual movement of containers and truck driving. So you got a nation that's not going to put their working population out of work. They're going to allow them to do something. Just like in China, at 3 o'clock in the morning, you got the pheasants that come into the city, and they clean up the street. And also you got a mechanism where people go to their office, and you have people that come by in a business and deliver from the pickup from their house their lunch bucket and take it to wherever they are in their city. African countries, in their agriculture business, they're not mechanizing, they're still utilizing the principles that they did use in order to make sure that people have something to do. But, you know, when you look at these European countries, you got your countries up there in Europe, your Spain, you got your France, your Britain. It got a color chart. It's called Population Growth Annual, and also the CDC.gov puts out a very, very good data on the birth of whites, Hispanics, and blacks. Now, this other chart that's color-coded, all the European countries, is light blue. And that's ranged from negative 0.4 to negative 0.9 in population growth. The highest one in the Mideast is Gaza, which is negative 1.3 to negative 1.7. But you go up to Lebanon, they like 2.9 to 4.4 population growth. So they, and you know, poor Japan, I don't know what the hell happened to it. They're negative 0.14. And people have said that Japanese population is growing old. The white, the sperm count in white males, hey, you shooting blanks.
Yeah, I recommend people check out Mark Blight. He has a book, Austerity, The History of a Dangerous Idea. He gets into that lump of labor fallacy concept that I was talking about, where these people are telling you that AI is coming and everything is going to change based on the idea of AI. So just check into that. And to further Pianchi's point, where you're talking about these different nations, here's the other part where you talk about aging population, and Germany is probably the best example. When you have a population that is majority, you know, elders, what do older people do economically that younger people don't? They save. So when you have a huge portion or a large swath of your population that is older, they don't participate in markets like normal or younger people do because they're net savers. And that causes a huge strain on your economy. So there's more to this than just the replacement rate. There's also, you know, how they participate in your economy and the resources they take up, the obligations you have as far as pensions. Somebody talked about Social Security earlier. Social Security would be sovereign and fine, though, honestly, if we didn't go into the basket constantly. Because during the Vietnam War, we put in a provision to where we could actually go into Social Security and borrow money from it. You remove that provision, and so Social Security would be fine. It'd be solvent. There'd be no issues with it.
Well, it depends, though, because we're doing something different that's never, ever been done. We haven't had the automation to this level. And not only that, the digital currency, they're going to want to collapse things. And the elite don't care about the population. They want to depopulate. So, you know, if in a perfect world, in a world where everyone had a heart of gold, it sounds great. Like, yeah, there'll be new opportunities, new education. The leader of this world, they don't care if half the world dies, as long as they get their mansion and their yacht and all this stuff. They're not trying to live, you know, small.
You're speaking of the elite as if they all have one way of thinking. There are people in that class who not only understand that you need a population who is working and employed and moving the gears of your economic system, and there are some who are nihilists, like you say, who don't care what happens as long as they get their share at the end of the day. But just like any other group, the elite, like, they've become a problem because of online, Facebook, and YouTube, where we present these scary stories of the elite being these ill, evil people who have these plans on the globe, and these plans will always happen, and you just have to wait for their plans to happen. No, the elite are like any other class. They get some things wrong, they get some things right, and within that class, there are some of them who love humanity and want to see humanity thrive, and there are some who are terrible and just as evil as you are describing. But there's not a consensus, and that's something that we got to break ourselves from, some of that conspiracy stuff where we start thinking it's a dark room and they're smoking cigars and planning the world for the next 60 years. The elite don't agree on enough things for all that kind of consensus, man.
Well, you're saying that from the safety of America. Go to the cartels in Mexico. Go to Iraq, where we blew the hell out of their country. Go to Syria. Go to Lebanon. Go to Hamas and Israel, where they're cutting the heads off of babies in the streets. And you really think the elite of the world give a rip? You think
the Israeli government has been limiting the population of non-Europeans who call themselves Jews. But here's another thing: LeBron James, Michael Jordan, and many of them that I can't name. I think it's like 35,000 black millionaires. I don't think they think that way.
LeBron James won't say a thing about China because he wants his Space Jam movie in China. He wants his shoe deal with whatever country they're doing.
But
he's not going to say a thing, but he'll talk about American evil.
Look how many prosperous people.
Go ahead. You're talking about a high school graduate and trying to judge him on global economic terms. LeBron James is a basketball player who had a Nike contract at 18. Of course he's going to side with Nike in any political dispute. You have to think about who that kid is. He's a kid who played basketball all his life, was a prodigy. He's 18 years old. He gets a $100 million deal from Nike before NBA contract. So when Nike gets in trouble for some of their labor practices, sweatshops, underage workers, and all that stuff, and they get fired from it, he, as the face of the NBA, cannot come out and say, "I condemn China's labor practice." Like, that would be stupid. So no, as a businessman and as an uneducated high school, you know, basketball genius,
right,
why would you expect him to have the perspective you have on global work, you know, labor practices? Like, come on, man, be serious.
He's not going
to be a puppet of what the. Why does he do a pyramid? Why does he do all CNI? Why does he throw
what Rockefeller and Jay-Z and the music was when LeBron was 18 years old and Jay-Z was bringing him in for concerts and treating him as a partner. So he was doing up that rock sign back in the day. So you're getting into some area that you don't know about. That's a hip-hop thing.
I live in Hollywood. I mean, I perform in Hollywood. I live with the industry. So do you believe in the Illuminati? Do you believe in Luciferianism and Masons?
I believe
some people do, and a lot of people
stuff,
don't.
But
you
do you think that controls
hang
the
on
world?
For a
no.
You know,
go ahead, bro.
You got blacks that are taking advantage of the things that they have privilege to just because of their skin color. Mugabe told black farmers you can have all of the land you want. Over in Ghana, in the Volta region where my wife is from, you had a tribe that made available for black America and those in the diaspora 35,000 hectares. In Liberia, you had a group called the River G. They made it, and you know, the only people that can be citizens of Liberia is actually, quote-unquote, the Negro, as it's written in this contract. They made available 750 square miles of virgin everything, water, solve everything for blacks if they want to come develop it. They're not giving that to nobody else. So things are going to change. I'm sorry. It's going to change.
Right. And what I'm saying is, because we were talking about the industry, why does Rihanna stand there in a red outfit and do a pyramid and stand there and smile? Why does Beyonce have to do a pyramid?
Again, you don't know what Rockefeller is. You still don't get it. Rockefeller Records, the diamond, that was their emblem. This is things they used to do. They don't really do it anymore because Rockefeller Records doesn't exist anymore. They're doing other things. But the people who follow these YouTube videos where they say these people are in Illuminati, look, if there was an Illuminati that controlled oil, gas, electricity, the big things in the world, why the hell do you think they're letting rappers and singers in, people who don't control anything? Like the fact that
because they believe in Lucifer as above, so below. They believe in the 369 of Tesla. That's how come Kobe did the 666 workout. 6 months, 6 hours, 6 days a week. Kevin LeBron is number six. That's how come.
Question for you.
That's how come the Bill Russell, the all-time ringleader, has six rings. That's how come Phil Jackson brought in the pyramid, the triangle
has
11 offense.
Rings.
He has
Sir,
the most rings, 11 rings,
about.
Just as Bill Russell does.
Yeah.
Well,
he won six
what's
rings.
Wrong with them?
You don't
what's
know
wrong
what you're talking about.
I'm just giving you knowledge here. You can ignore what
no,
the industry is.
No, this
yeah,
is not
but
ignoring.
The thing
I'm
is,
telling you, you don't know what you're
that's,
talking about.
That's just ignorance.
Yeah,
that's
no,
what they,
the thing is,
no,
you
not,
need to
not,
the thing is, the thing is that they got a right to believe anything they want. You got some people believing that two twins fought in the damn womb of a woman and another man by the name who was coming from Candia crossed two rivers and became the father of the nation. So they can believe whatever they
right.
want. But when you sit down
yes,
to do
what
business,
do they believe?
When you sit down to do business, we talking business. And it's just obvious
right.
that who ran things in the past ain't going to be running them in the future. Likelihood, they won't be around. And, you know, I'm not trying to be a racist, but white skin is only 6,000 to 8,000 years old. That's what they say. It's a mutation. And as the temperature increases, people are going to start dying because you can only as a human being survive around 108, 110, 112 degrees. Then you got problems. You either going to go through adaptation that's going to change your physique, or I don't know what to tell you.
Well, what I can tell you is that why is Michael Jackson turn into a Black Panther, grab his crotch, and stand there in front of Eddie Murphy or Magic Johnson as the Pharaoh? Why does Katy Perry have black horse and she has a Cleopatra thing on? Well, I can go down the whole list of all them. Gaga, why does she have the star eye and the black box?
Algorithm.
Why did they talk to Marina Abramovic? Spirit cooking. I'm not talking conspiracy. They put it right in your face. And if you don't see
you
that,
are.
I can't. They're telling you what they're into. They tell you. They do the parties.
No, you need to clean up your algorithm, brother. You've been a watch.
No, I don't need to clean the algorithm. You're not looking at the algorithm. Do you believe? Do you know that they want to do Neuralink? They want to do a chip in your head.
You got it,
you know that Elon Musk. You know that to keep up with the AI, they have to upload you into the cloud. Is that conspiracy? Is that conspiracy?
No, that's an actual story that Elon Musk is
yes,
trying
put
to
in
create
chimpanzees,
technology.
Right?
Hold on.
Right?
Hold on,
15
brother.
Of them.
Hold on, brother. Hold on. They're testing on animals, but let's really explore that. So Elon Musk said he was going to provide these tunnels across different cities to relieve traffic. He said he would be on Mars by 2025. Elon Musk has made a lot of promises that have not come into fruition. So if you're willing to sign up to let Elon Musk's company do that to your brain, good luck.
Do they have microchips in people and in animals? Are the pets chipped right now? They are. You know it. I know because I have a dog. It has a chip in it. Kids are chipping kids. You know, Foxconn chipping their employees. I'm talking science.
Okay.
I'm talking reality. This is
for identification purposes.
Identification. It's called the mark of the beast.
You got chips on. Have you ever drone by a cow pasture? Damn near every cow in the pasture got something in his ear. It's usually yellow tag.
Yes, but now it's an RFID chip from, you know, that tracks things. You know, you go down to Whole Foods, you wave your, now they're doing facial recognition and hand scan before you can walk in and buy stuff.
They use a drone to fly over the herd of cattle, and they can see who's there and who ain't.
Right.
Yep.
Now you're getting with the program, Google.
The days is over. No, we're not getting with the same program. You're talking about something that's real and tangible. Before, you were talking about music videos and musicians, which is silly YouTube nonsense.
That's not YouTube nonsense. That's reality. That's
okay.
What they promote. That's
well,
what they
disagree.
Worship. They tell you what they're
well,
into.
We agree to disagree. I think.
Well, I'm saying you're not. You haven't recorded with Tim Stewart,
affairs.
Who's Lady Gaga's guitarist, who goes into clothes. Sessions because they can't communicate what they're seeing and what they're doing. They can't put it out there. You see Sam Smith when he put on his satanic red horns and devil outfit?
Well,
they do the whole circle. They do with fire and cages and bondage sets.
Brother,
well, that's no different than the Pope. What did the Pope do when he be putting wafers in people's mouths?
I don't need to clean up anything. I'm just telling you what they're pumping.
The Pope is feeding you the body of Christ, then he gives you a chalice that's supposed to be the blood of Jesus, which is nothing more than some damn Morgan David wine. That's why some people like to go through the line two or three times.
well, here's the question. So you believe that the blood of Christ is foolishness, right?
Hell no.
It doesn't mean anything,
what
right?
You
want
to
We were having a conversation about real world affairs, and now here we are talking about conspiracies and music.
Coming to this damn.
Oh, not conspiracy. Again, just go on the internet. I can go for 5 hours and talk to you about the practices and how they
well,
do their gig. Epstein Island, you know, the elites and what they do, the bloodlines with the royals, with the Rothschilds. We can go down there if you want to talk reality. But how come there aren't any black. With the throne, why aren't there any black kids on when Meghan Markle married Harry? Why was there a stink? Because her mom was black. They didn't want that bloodline. It has to be the Windsors or the Tudors.
Markle is not black.
Her mom is.
There we go again, coming up with new definitions and new words.
I'm not the one. The royals, they're the ones who asked. They said, is your baby going to come out black? That was a big complaint from Harry and her.
It's just like you did with the Creoles. The Creoles don't use such definition. You got Creoles that's as black as Isaac Hayes. You got Creoles that's as white as Bill Clinton. And you got those in the middle that look like Beyonce. They don't use those definitions. And they got a right to do it. It was white that required them. The ones that was in the middle and the ones on one, they required them to identify as white. Why did you do that?
The royals are concerned about that. They own 1/6 of the planet, 6.6 billion acres. You can Google that. You can Google that.
All right, that's enough of that.
I'm just giving you facts.
So I'm talking about some world problems instead of this mythical.
Well, that
stuff is
the world problems because you were talking about the royal, about the England. And their whole colonialism. And
I was talking
stuff.
About the birth rate. You know, my brother had at least 18 kids. None of them on welfare. They're all college educated.
Huh?
When we have a family reunion, he have a whole contingent that comes in off of his seed.
Say a whole army.
A whole army.
Yeah, and the thing with England is interesting because. You know, this has kind of become popular online where you see people talking about the Rothschilds and all these different families. And what these people don't understand is the compounding nature of capitalism. These royals and these old families who you talk about, who you think control the world and are so wealthy, they don't have a fraction of the wealth of a Jeff Bezos, of a Elon Musk. Because of the amount of money that can compound with some of the deals that they do now. So this old money that these people think are the strongest and wealthiest, these are people who, you know, they own the rights to a castle and they got a little something, but it's nowhere near in relation to the wealth of today, the tech moguls, the people who own infrastructure, real tangible things, oil, gas.
Oh, like, you mean like BlackRock and Vanguard? Right? Larry Fink?
Not old families that people think are
right.
Running everything.
You know what BlackRock is, right?
Brother.
BlackRock is
publicly traded. We all know what BlackRock is.
Larry Fink, right?
Yeah,
you know, they do as much as the American economy. They do over $20 trillion in investments. You know that, right?
Brother,
BlackRock is American traded.
And Vanguard, too.
Let me explain something to you. This goes to the American comparisons to Rome. When Rome started to expand, and, you know, these generals are going to another area, they take over the area, and as long as you brought the tax money revenue back to Rome, you were able to govern that area. That was the deal. And as that started to happen more and more for Rome, you know what happened? The old families of Rome, the blue blood families of Rome, started to become less significant because these other groups were making so much more wealth than them. So, you know, you can kind of tie that to today and understand how these economic relations play. Yes, you're a wealthy person in the old system, but guess what happens when the next generation comes around
and
they're compounding fortunes? It's different.
Well, you know what, Nod? When you look at that type of greed and devilment, I hate to say it, but it's only come. What the hell is the Crusades doing over in Asia Minor? What are they doing over there? Somebody tell me, what was they looking for? Somebody said they were looking for the Holy. What the hell is the Holy Grail? That ain't no your part of the world. Get your butt back up there in Italy, in Rome. But no, they got to come down there. They tried to go down into Kush, into the southern area, and they got their ass whooped by women. It's the same old thing, John. You got a problem.
I think
you need to look at yourself in the mirror. Do you ever
I think it had something to do with Islam.
Mirror?
I think it had something to do with Islam, correct? You don't think that the Moors, you don't think they came?
There was no Islam at that time. But here's the thing. Whatever they had no business going into Egypt. What you go to Egypt for?
How did they get into Spain? How did Islam get into Spain?
That's much later.
Oh, they conquered and killed, right? They raped and pillaged.
Yeah, they did.
That's history. Please tell me that's history.
Well,
you don't know that.
Yeah, of course. That's a different story. That's much later.
Well, that's why he was talking about the Crusades. It's like, you know, it's tit for tat.
The Crusades didn't start until
Islam ran across Europe, right?
Yeah. What were they doing down in those areas?
Well, hold on.
You got plenty
of
stuff up to do.
They got greedy. I'm with you. They got greedy. Yeah.
So read about the Children's Crusade if you really want to know, where they marched all these children down there in order to sell them into slavery when they told them that they were going to save Christendom. When they got down there, they actually sold them into slavery.
I'm with you on that.
So if you really want to get into those Crusades, we can.
Hey,
and what did they,
it's evil on both sides,
that,
is all I'm saying.
Wait a minute. Why did they think that Christendom belonged to them? You know what? I have to say this. God really must have loved black people. He made so many of them.
He loves black people.
He made so many of them.
We're probably all black, right?
Well, if we're being honest,
how many times
since
have
we're
I
having
said
a conversation
that?
and we claim to roll with science, in science there is no such thing as race. Race is a social classification created by man in order to separate and
right.
divide.
Right, we're all just one. We're brothers and sisters. It's amount of pigment in us. Yeah, that's all.
Yeah, so if we're doing scientific terms, race doesn't even matter. But since we live in a real world where race does matter, and one group decided that everyone who was non-white, they were going to attack, like that became a historical problem. Now, eventually, that problem will see its, you know, will solve itself. The idea of race will at some point go away. At some point, we're going to get over that. We're going to mature as a species. But for now, this is something that has to be fought against because the people who have decided that race is the determining factor, they don't want to let go of the ill-gotten gains, the blood-soaked spoils of war. They don't want to let it go, and they really need to.
secure.
I believe we put the host to sleep.
You're starting to see that today. I mean,
do you think we're going to have a one world order, the United Nations 2030 agenda? You think we're going to have one central UN like Dr. Tedros at the...
No, we're going to have that.
Well, here's something. Check this out.
No,
193 nations of the world have jointly signed formal agreement that in the next pandemic, the ultimate non-questionable authority for pandemic protocol will be Dr. Tedros at the World Health Organization. I didn't vote for him. He's not part of our country. But if whatever happens, if he says five needles in the arm and a mask, and this is reality because I couldn't go to the gym like 2 years ago because I didn't have a vax card. And at the moment, like, I'm in between. I'm just gigging around here, basically homeless, but I'm in, I'm having the time of my life.
Americans are such children. They think a slight inconvenience means tyranny, when in all reality, what we were talking about was cooperation and trying to figure out a way during the time when we didn't know enough about this virus to try to solve it. But no, you were not locked down. There was no situation where you didn't have freedom and your life was taken away from you. Americans
are you
are
kidding
really
me? They shut down churches. They shut down businesses. People lost. I have friends that lost their whole life.
Down.
They worked 40 years and their restaurants were
they
shut down.
They didn't shut these things down. People
they
agreed
did.
That we needed to cooperate in order to get through the down period. And as we learned more and more, we started to change our behavior at the beginning of the pandemic.
So you believe that the mask, actually a level 4
virus,
that the mask
protects
us, right?
Hey, don't tell me what I believe. At the beginning of the pandemic, we were wiping off. I'm talking, brother.
Did you wear your mask like
pandemic,
they commanded you to?
Brother,
did you wear a mask?
Brother, I'm talking. I've dealt with you anti-vaxxers before. Calm down. At the beginning of the pandemic, we were wiping off groceries before we bought them in the house. As we learned more, we changed our behavior. But these dramatic anti-vaxxers who have decided this is their, you know, moment have tried to retcon that whole period and turn it into this period of tyranny where they couldn't live their lives. No. We just had a period of discovery where we had to figure out what was going on. That was it.
And where did it come from? The plague. Where did it come from?
That matters.
Oh, yeah, she did. Do you know that Fauci, I'm sure you know this, in 2016, he shut down our level 4 virus lab, and he sent it to, where did he send it to? He sent it to, no, listen, if you want to learn something, he sent it.
You
believe everything that you're told, right? It just, he sent it, you can Google this, to Wuhan.
Keep watching those videos, brother.
Do you want to listen to me? I listen to you.
Ahead.
He sent it with $3.4 million to Wuhan to set up a level 4 virus lab. And where did it come from after years after the Senate investigated and asked Fauci? Oh, it came from Wuhan. Oh, what a coincidence in the whole freaking world, right? But that's a conspiracy. No, that's fact. That's reality. Now you can deduce it any way you want. You can say, oh, is it planned or whatever, or accidental? But that's how it went down.
Yeah. So this is the problem with conspiracy theories. So
and all the military, all our police, they had to take the vax or lose their job. Medical workers had to take the shot or lose their job.
You mean
it's like Nuremberg, right?
With the public? No, it's nothing like Nuremberg. That was people who came in contact with the public as we didn't know more. Yes, we had to take precautions. Now, let's get into your whole little spiel about Wuhan. So,
here's the question
of a virus. No. You just stop talking, brother. Can I talk? So,
go
the
ahead.
Origin of
yeah,
a virus,
I'm listening.
You describe in one city, and you tell me that that city and that country basically planned this out. Now, let's deal with if they planned this out. So, Bianca, you know a lot about China. China makes their money off exports. China needs shipping lanes to be open. They need to have goods travel from one nation to the other, and they need open markets. Would it be in their interest to create a virus that shuts down all of those things, Bianca? I'm asking you, sir.
Well, they wouldn't do that because they depend on them. But is it all right with you if I play this little voice clip on Al Gore? It only takes about 20 seconds. Listen to it. Here we go.
Ubiquitously available so women can choose how many children and the spacing of children is crucial to the future shape of human civilization. Africa is projected to have more people than China or India by mid-century, more than China and India combined by the end of the century. And this is one of the causal factors that must be addressed. Now, where climate itself is...
Now, here they have in a conversation on African policy. It must be 15 of them there. Guess how many black people's on the panel? Guess.
Why do you do that, John? None. Maybe one.
Here you're talking about people that's going to represent the largest population on the planet, including China and India combined. And here you making decisions about them, and none of them allowed to represent. It's the same goddamn thing that happened at the Niagara Conference. It's the same thing that happened at the Versailles Treaty when a European country carved up Africa. What is wrong with you? What is wrong with you?
You have a serious problem.
I haven't made any decisions. You call these problems that the world has to deal with at some point in time. You can't run away from it. Karma is
I'm not running away from anything. I'm actually voicing the concern of what's going on. Like, you guys are going to dance with whatever
the
they want.
For
you know, they shut down.
Is an opt-out. I think people chase conspiracy theories by opting out of what the real world concerns are, so that way they don't have to address them.
Guess what the next thing they're talking about doing? They're talking about emitting aluminum crystals in order to block out the sun because it's getting too hot. Well, I like the heat. Don't you, Naj? It don't bother me.
Mm-hmm. Nope. Basically, it's the laziest, stupidest way to address climate change. It's addressing climate change with the idea that the financial situations don't change for corporations. Go ahead, Don. Don, we've been waiting to hear from you.
No, I just wanted to say that that humans cannot live in 108 degrees, so it can only be so hot, and then we all just smoke out, Bianchi. Other than that, you guys. Doing pretty well with the conversation.
So the question is, why are we getting shots for something that it won't fix because the next thing that comes along, it won't cover? So in other words, you're always going to have more shots to handle the mutations. This is a money-making machine.
Hey, John, I got something for you.
What
look
do you
up,
think the world is,
animal,
John?
Look up
you
Higher Animals by
machine.
Michael Spector. Higher Animals by Michael Spector. It's a book about not only vaccines, but some of the super viruses that we are going to create, not only because of Big Agra, where we have all of these animals in one area and filthy conditions that's going to create super viruses, but also our inability to understand this world that we live in and how we're going to have to adapt, not only through vaccines, but also figuring out that at a certain point, shout out to George Carlin, maybe the earth says we are the parasitic species who is causing problems and tries to shake us off. And we are going to have
You're
to figure out ways
right,
to stay
God.
On this planet.
You are
absolutely to that point,
right. If
to
we
that
catch
point,
anybody coming up with some schemes to create virus, you know the human genome has been exposed to over 323 trillion viruses since its conception. I think that the human genome knows how to handle that. But you got these deviant people. You got these deviant people, these demons. And I'm telling you this, if they are caught trying to create a virus that's going to be used for population control, they need to be lynched in public.
Well, we have African tribes. We have people in the outback. Aboriginals, we have Eskimos, we have Amish, we have Native Indians. Groups have lived for hundreds of years in synchronicity, in balance with the nature. Like you can come back 2,000 years later and things will be as pretty much as they were. But you have a couple hundred years of our advanced, high technology industrialization, how much can we handle? Yeah, sure, we can adapt to viruses, things, but the super viruses, bio war, you know, that kind of stuff, the super chemicals that we're coming up with, how are we going to survive that?
Don't come up with something that's detrimental to humankind. That's how you survive it. And as I said before, anybody with these devious schemes, like those scientists out there in New Jersey that was making pellets and selling them down to people in South America, what they were was designed to sterilize women. They need to be lynched publicly.
Well, either way, one way or the other, we're going to die. So the question is either you're cosmic dust and it's meaningless, or there's an eternity. Just look up after death, documented, scientific, just the facts of people that NDE, near-death experience, and just look at their accounts, the things that they say, things that they have no possible way of knowing, conversations in the waiting room, conversations between the doctors and the nurses when they have zero brain waves, when their eyes are taped shut with earplugs in their ears blasting 95 to 100 decibel because they don't want any motor activity because their blood has been pumped out, they're flatlined, and they're basically keeping the body chilled so they can operate on the brain surgery, and the person can come out of the surgery and say, oh, you know what, I was shocked twice. The nurse was telling me my left ventricle was too large. They had to go to the other side. The doctor used a tool that no one knew how to describe, and she's describing it. It looked like a water pick with a saw on it. And she's telling this stuff to a guy going, a researcher, and this is, you know, you can go on and on. There's hundreds of thousands of these stories. Just see the movie After Death, and then tell me there's not a spiritual afterlife. They all go down
well,
the tunnel.
I can explain that. When you die, you don't die all at once. Probably several days later, your ears are still working. That's why. You don't die
okay.
all at once.
When okay, so let me. I'm going to put a Walkman headset on. I'm going to pump 95 to 100 decibel in there, and I'm going to have a conversation and see if you can hear. Now, but your eyes are shut, so you can't even read the lips. And you're going to tell me? I mean, you've left the realm of logic here because I'm a musician
well,
and I understand.
I'll tell you what
you
that
have 100
is
decibel,
is
that's a rock concert.
That's vibrational.
Hold on, man.
Wait a minute. How do you think Beethoven done what he was? Wasn't he deaf?
He wasn't flatlined, zero brain activity.
No, we ain't talking about
an operating
this.
Table.
The vibrations music. That you feel, you can determine what the hell is causing them and how the pattern that it's putting in place. That's how that happened. Beethoven was able to impose his fifth symphony, and he couldn't even hear.
Okay, right. let's try an experiment. I want you to put on a headset, a Walkman, blast it full level, and try to hear the conversation on the phone that we're having. But put them in both ears, and let's test this out. You want to do this right now? We can do this,
brother.
We can test it right now. Well,
it's about feeling the vibrations.
I'm telling you reality.
You
just don't want to accept reality.
Hold on. Before we accept this as reality, what I would suggest you do is pull up that movie that you just advertised and also the corresponding books who talk about this phenomenon. And what you're going to find out is there's not many footnotes in that book. There's not many sources for that movie. These are anecdotal stories told as if they're researched and presented as evidence, when in reality, most of this stuff is just things people say. Remember in the 80s where they used to tell these stories about how a woman with adrenaline would lift the whole car off a baby and all these different, you know, fantastic things? And then you say, okay, well, how do we suss this story down? Where's the origin of this story? Can we find the woman who actually did this? And what happens is, you never find the actual subjects because these are tall tales of the day. This is like back in the day around the campfire where people would come up with the biggest yarn and everybody would listen to who told the best lie.
I wish you would actually look at the research from over 15,000 15,000
interviews
with people, just as they do every research, as they do a funding by the American Journal of Medical Industry or JAMA, whatever it is. That just it's scientific
whatever
papers
it is.
That's
right.
been put
the
pushed
key
through.
Word, the key word is funding.
Right.
Let me ask you something.
Yeah.
Do you have a telephone, a cell phone that can be on vibration and no audible sound? Yeah.
Yeah.
They do.
Yeah.
Matter of fact, you can send Morse code over a vibrating phone. Very easy.
Right.
Now, here's the point, John. I'm going to tell you this one. If you want to believe that, go ahead on and believe it. If you got faith, it's good for you. Why are you trying to put it on the other people? And sure, keep your faith. Keep it.
Because
does
1 + 1 well, because I'm saying 1 + 1 = 2, and you're saying if you want to believe that, I'm saying that's a fact. That's just what is.
No,
you can believe 1 + 1 = 5. You can believe that.
We're saying
how can a person in India
and what you believe leads you to these conclusions, and then you assume those conclusions are universal. So when you talk to a Muslim who's on the edge of death and he tells you how Allah spoke to him and he saw this and he saw that about paradise. Now, was that because he was a Muslim and he was trained in a certain way to see certain things? So, of course, at deathbed, he saw the light in that way. And then you talk
it's
to
It's going
to
be colored through his religious interpretation,
exactly,
just like a Christian will see
Jesus.
No, it's
going to be colored to his training. Shout out to the greatest writer in American history. Oh, hold on, John. Shout out to the greatest writer in American history. His name was Mark Twain. He had a book called What Is Man? And in that book, you will understand what I'm talking about when it comes down to training. The Jesuits used to say, if you give it to a child at 4, we'll have him for life. That has not changed.
Well, what hasn't changed is that a person in India goes down a dark tunnel and encounters the light, whether he calls it, you know, someone calls it Muhammad or Allah. The point is, they all go down
a
tunnel. Independent, not knowing each other, they're giving the same story. A guy in Canada, the same story. A guy in South America, the same story.
You notice they never have any documentation. Never have any documentation. No name.
And then they mentioned
in the movie they go through several of these doctors who started the research in the 70s, and they started to document this because no one had done it before, because now we have the technology where there's more of these people being revived because of shocking.
And then they just keep up the studies to keep the grant coming. We know how this works, man. Pianchi tried this.
Oh, they were skeptics when they started the stuff. They're like, we don't believe this. We want to, you know.
Do they get
and
paid?
In the beginning, he's like,
Do you guys have a 10 minute warning?
Yeah,
okay.
Man. Go ahead and cut your show off. This stuff is getting too deep. I'm already standing on a step ladder.
Well, I just don't want to stay awake all night waiting for the phone to. Having to hang the phone up.
Where?
I'm already standing on the step ladder.
Well, why do you
want to
leave a subject that we're all going to face?
I don't want to leave a subject. I'm an old woman with little energy.
Where have you been? No, host, you need to account for yourself. Where have you been? You got us into a Facebook argument on here. Where have you been? You were
because it's where we're headed.
Sometimes, you know, like, I have a lot of stuff to do, and you guys are so efficient that I was just going to let you guys run the show.
I've talked to Pianchi and John on many subjects, and they are well-versed on many subjects. I did not know you were setting me up for a Facebook conversation. I'm sad.
Who's setting you up? Are you talking to Pianchi or me?
I'm talking to you. You're the host. You're responsible for this.
Are you talking about Facebook? I'm not even your friend on Facebook.
No, you missed the meat of the conversation we were having because it was a Facebook dumb conspiracy conversation. You missed it.
Yeah.
It was terrible.
Well, you're calling it dumb.
Okay,
Naj, I'm talking.
I went through a recent crisis with my son, and I've been having problems coping. So I just kind of faded away like the wind.
I'm sorry.
Go ahead, cut your show. Go to bed. You got to work tomorrow.
Yeah, I'll let you guys stay on 20 more minutes, but then I have to come back in the living room and hang up my land phone.
No, I can't do 20 more. I can't do 20 more.
No,
I've
got to
go. I can't do it.
Hello. We got to go back to life and then die and you know, spend the rest of our lives dealing with what's next.
Yeah, good,
that's all.
Good luck with that, brother.
Have a good night, you guys. God bless
man,
you.
Oh, man, you guys are running away. I want to talk some more.
No, you
okay,
going, brother.
You guys
everybody
go for the first half hour. I didn't say anything in the first half hour.
You're the heavyweight champion. You won, brother.
Oh, man, let's go the distance.
But
you should go
see Yankee already hung up.
Who
wants, John's still on the phone. Who wants to stay five more minutes?
Oh, they don't want to leave. They
okay,
hang
John, I'm sure you guys had plenty of time to talk. You guys have been on the air 95 minutes.
Yeah, we've covered the bases.
Thanks for carrying the show, everybody contributing. Nice hearing your voice again, Naj. And we usually are on Thursday nights at 10:30 Central Time, okay? All right, take care, y'all.
Power to the people.
Bye-bye.
Power to the people.